ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 9, The Passing Away of Bhishma Dev, text number 47. Tushtubhu Munayaha Rishtaha Krishnam Tat Guya Namabihi Tataha te Krishna Ridayaha Swashaman Prayayuhu Punaha Tushtubur Munayo Rishta Krishnam Tad Guyam Namabihi Tataste Krishna Ridayaha Swashaman Prayayu Punaha Tushtubur Munayo Rishta Krishnam Tad Guyanamabhi Tataste Krishna Ridaya Swashaman Prayayu Punaha Tushtubur Munayo Rishta Krishnam Tad Guyanamabhi Tataste Krishna Ridaya Swashraman Prayayu Punaha.
Krishna
Hridayaha Krishna Hridaya
Swashraman Prayayuk Punaha
Swashraman Prayayuk Punaha
Tushtubur Munayo Vrishta
Tushtubur Munayo Vrishta
Krishnam Tadguya Namabihi
Krishnam Tadguya Namabihi
Tataste Krishna Hridaya
Tataste Krishna Hridaya
Swashraman Prayayuk Punaha
Swashraman Prayayuk Punaha
Tushtubur Munayo Vrishta
Tushtubur Munayo Vrishta
Krishnam Tadguya Namabihi
Krishnam Tadguya Namabihi
Tataste Krishna Hridaya
Tataste Krishna Hridaya
Swashraman Prayayu Punaha
Swashraman Prayayu Punaha
Tushtubur Munayo Vrishta
Tushtubur Munayo Vrishta
Krishnam Tadguya Namabihi
Krishnam Tadguya Namabihi
Tathe Krishna Hridaya
Tataste Krishna Hridaya
Swasraman Prayogya Punaha
Swasraman Prayogya Punaha
Tushtubur Munayo Vrishta
Tushtubur Munayo Vrishta
Krishnam Tadguya Namabihi
Krishnam Tadguya Namabihi
Tataste Krishna
Tataste Krishna Hridaya
Swarashmaman Prayayu Punaha
Svashavan prayayu kunaha.
Tushtavur
munayo vishta.
Krishnam
tad
guhya nama bihi. Tushtur munayo rishta Krishnam tat guhyanam abhi Tataste Krishna ridayak Swashyaman prayayu punaha Tutushvuhu. Satisfied. Munayaha. The great sages headed by Vyasadeva, etc. Rishtaha.
All in a happy mood.
Krishnam.
Unto Lord Krishna.
The personality of Godhead.
Tat.
His.
Guhya.
Confidential.
Namabihi.
By his holy name, etc.
Tatak,
thereafter.
Te,
they.
Krishna
Ridaya.
Persons who always bear Lord Krishna in their hearts.
So Ashaman.
To their respective hermitages.
Prayayu.
Returned.
Punaha.
Again.
Translation by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
All the great sages then glorified Lord Sri Krishna, who was present there by confidential Vedic hymns. Then all of them returned to their respective hermitages, bearing always Lord Krishna within their hearts. Purport by His Divine Grace. The devotees of the Lord are always in the heart of the devotees of the Lord are always in the heart of the Lord, and the Lord is always in the hearts of the devotees. That is the sweet relation between the Lord and His devotees. Due to unalloyed love and devotion for the Lord, the devotees always see Him within themselves, and the Lord also, although He has nothing to do and nothing to aspire to, is always busy in attending to the welfare of His devotees. For the ordinary living beings, the law of nature is there for all actions and reactions, but He is always anxious to put His devotees on the right path. The devotees, therefore, are under the direct care of the Lord. And the Lord also voluntarily puts Himself under the care of His devotees only. So all the sages, headed by Vyasadeva, were devotees of the Lord, and therefore they chanted the Vedic hymns after the funeral ceremony just to please the Lord, who was present there personally. All the Vedic hymns are chanted to please Lord Krishna. This is confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita 15:15. All the Vedas, Upanishads, Vedanta, etc. are seeking Him only, and all hymns are for glorifying Him only. The sages, therefore, performed the exact acts suitable for the purpose, and they happily departed for their respective hermitages.
Tushtivur muniyo rishtaha krishnam tad guhya namabihi tataste krishna ridaya svashaman prayayu punaha om gyana timidandasya gyananjana shadakaya chakshurun miditam jena tasmai shri gurave namaha
Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Stapitam Jena Bhutade Swayam Rupakadamayam Dadhati Sabadantikam Mukham Karudivachadam Pangam Longayate Girim Yat Kripatamaham Vande Shri Gurun Dinatadanam Namashrishtumanum Apisachi Putram Atrasarupam Rupam Tasyagajim Udubunim Maturim Goshtavatim Radha Kundam Girivadamaho Radhika Madhavasam Prapto Yasya Patitak Kipiyo Shri Gurun Tannatosmi Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavam Cha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvetam Sadvadhutam Padijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhan Vitamscha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namane Namaste Sarasati Deve Gaudavani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatyadi Shatarane Panchakalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Sivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Antai Madalabala Hari Dasya Bhayo Yad Rama Krishna Charana Sparasha Pramodaha Manam Tanoti Sahago Ganayostayo Yat Bhani Yasu Yavasakandana Kandamulahai Matsamo Nasti Papatma Napadadi Nakaschana Pari Hare Pilajjame Kimbruve Purushottama Yuvatinam tata yuni yunam cha yavatao yata Mano bidabate tadvam Mano me ramatam toyi Bhumau skalita padanam Bhumire babalam banam Toyi jata padadanam Tvam meva sharanam prabho Govinda balabe radhe Pratye tvamaham sada tudiyam iti janatu Govindo mam tvaya saha Radhe vrindavanadishe karunamrita bahini Kripaya tava padabja asyam mayam pradiyatam Hare Krishna. So this very, very special situation in which the Lord has arranged a supernatural and rare event when he and all the devotees and sages came together to hear from Bhishma Dev the science of how to live in this world without falling down. The details of the Varnashram system. When the Battle of Kurukshetra finished, we've heard how Yudhishthira Maharaj felt very bad. See, this is the nature of a good soul. When a good soul does something that is considered socially or, you know, in general, unacceptable or abominable, then the good soul feels bad. Whereas, of course, all souls are transcendental, but we're talking about the souls who are embodied in the material world, who are who have attained different stages of degrees of attainment, degrees of entanglement or disentanglement from the lower modes of material nature. And when we say bad soul, we mean the soul that is entangled in the lower modes of nature, which push them, ignorance and passion, push a soul, force the soul to do things that are not generally acceptable. This is Krishna. Arjuna asks this question to Krishna. Arjuna Ubacha, Atakena Prayuktoyam Papam Charachi Purusha Anichchan Abhivarshniyam Balad Ibaniyochitaha. Balad means force. So here Arjuna is saying, you know, sometimes I don't want to do something bad, but I seem to be forced to do. What is that? Why is that? And Krishna answers, Shri Bhagavan Uvacha, Kama Esha, Krodha Esha, Rajo Guna Samudbhava, Mahashino Mahapapma Vidyenam Idavarinam. He said, the cause of the illegal activities, the activities that are against the laws of nature, are not caused by me directly. This is a big question, because sometimes people think if Krishna is in charge of the modes of material nature and these bad things are happening to me, then, you know, Krishna must, you know, want these bad things to happen to me. He's in control of the material nature is causing everything, prakriti kriyamana nigunai karmani samasya, and yet, you know, these bad things are happening to me. What kind of good God is that? You know? So here Krishna is answering. Kama esha, krodha esha, raja, when the soul decides to come to this material world and comes in contact with the mode of passion, then the passion forces, the mode of passion forces the soul to do things that he doesn't want to do. Just like in an ordinary society, there is the institutions which accommodate people's daily activities. You know, with so many institutions, you have universities, you have hospitals, you have government, you know, functionaries, and you have sporting, you know, institutions and events, and you have so many, you know, the economic, you know, structures, and all these things are going on. And you also have the prison house. You see, it's also a structure, an infrastructure within that framework of infrastructures that are provided by the government. And, but when the person acts against the law of the state, then he's put into the prison. The government does not put out a, you know, like a advertisement. Okay, please, you know, come and visit our prison house. You know, you're welcome to, you know, do this activity and this activity and this activity, and we welcome you into the prison house. No, they put out their advertisements for people to get educated, to go to the educational institutions and so many other, you know, parks and recreational facilities and so many other things that are provided. But some are but some are, you know, under the influence of this mode of passion and ignorance, they perform acts that are antisocial. They're antisocial. They impose themselves upon other people. they force other people to against their will be inconvenienced. Srila Prabhupada once was asked to give a lecture. I don't remember exactly where it was, but he was asked to give a lecture on free will or something like that. And Srila Prabhupada explained that real... Was it free will? No, it was... Anyway, that was the general subject. There was another way that Prabhupada expressed it, but that was the general subject. And yes, nonviolence, I'm sorry. It was nonviolence. That was the subject that he was asked to speak on. It was in India in the early days before he came to America. And he explained that real nonviolence, real violence meant to stop a person by force from doing something that they are naturally able to do or want to do or, you know, is their nature to do. This is real nonviolence. It's not just killing, you see. So Maharaj Yudhishthir was a good soul, and therefore, even though the cause was righteous, and even though Krishna was behind the scenes taking all pains to try to solve the situation diplomatically, the one party of the Kurus, Dhritarashtra and Duryodhana and the sons of other sons of Dhritarashtra, they could not hear and they could not respond to the efforts of Krishna through his devotees to make peace. And you know that famous statement, you know, I would not give them. They just said, well, just, you know, give them just a village, you know, something to... They were actually the rightful heirs to the whole kingdom, you know, and Dhritarashtra unlawfully usurped this this position from them, and due to attachment to his son, Duryodhana, and his other sons, he could not hear, and he arranged this war situation. So, when a good soul, and Maharaj Yudhishthira was the rightful heir to the throne, he was a senior Pandava, and he was the son of Dharmaraj, son of a demigod. All the Pandavas were sons of demigods, and they were therefore imbued with all good qualities. They were righteous, they were religious, they were honest, they were sincere, they were powerful spiritually. And they were devotees of Krishna. They were pure devotees of Krishna. They were friends in Krishna and have different relationship with Krishna. So Maharaj Yudhishthira felt very bad after the Battle of Kurukshetra because so many men were killed, and that meant that women were widowed, and sons and relatives were placed in difficult situation. Now you see the way the world is now. There's verses in the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita that confirm what's happening in the world today. Now that the, you know, the family, you know, structure is breaking apart, and so few couples are actually staying together and raising the children and being responsible and giving that love and affection, which is the basis of the security, you know, in the hearts of all of us. We need emotional security. We need affection. We need care. We need we need to be trained how to what to do, what not to do properly. And in such a circumstance as war, and such a circumstance as, you know, unrighteous and horrible acts that are going on today in the name of religion, in the name of, you know, protecting people, in the name of so many things, so many isms. All the good qualities of human society are going, and people are hating one another with such intensity that they even teach their little children, you know, from the beginning, you know, to hate the Westerners, or to hate this group, or hate that group, or this religious group, or that religious group. So this was very bad, and in order to, but Krishna, he loves everyone. He loves everyone. Here it's described that Tushtubu, Buniyo, Hrishta, now all the sages, they were happy. They were satisfied. When we become connected with Krishna, when we hear from Krishna, when we learn what to do, what not to do, we become satisfied. You know, before these extended family system broke apart, you know, people were happier actually. And even today, when they do these polls and they surveys and they decide, you know, which country has the happiest population, the most satisfied population, guess what country comes out on the top generally? At least the last few years, I don't know. Bangladesh, you know, the poorest, most subject to cataclysmic disasters of any country in the world, and yet because they have this deep piety, you know, ingrained in them from generations and generations and generations ingrained, even as far down as India's going, you know, in terms of, you know, chasing after the West and all those things. Still, when you go there, there's an atmosphere that's different, and you feel happier. It's easier to chant, you know, isn't it? It's easier to chant. You know, people come. Since we moved to Govardhan in 1994, that's some years now, 15 years, the number of people from Delhi who come out with their families to go around Govardhan Hill has increased, like, exponentially. Like literally hundreds of times more. Before, it was like there were 3 or 4 days during the year when the place was really packed up. And the rest of the time it was like, you know, pretty calm and few people going around, but nothing. But now, after every Ekadashi, from Ekadashi to Purnima, or from Ekadashi even to Amavasya now, you know, it's become so big crowds that they sometimes can't even let cars onto the... We have to go around another way to get to our place, which is on the Parikrama Mark. It's so many people, you know. So, Yudhishthira felt bad, and therefore Krishna arranged this situation that Bhishma would be there, you know, lying on the bed of arrows, and by the benefit of this blessing that he got, he could choose when he wanted to leave. And because he was a, you know, great devotee of Krishna, even though he was on the other side, he was a great devotee of Krishna. He was worshipping Krishna in the Viraha Bhav, the chivalry ras, where he was giving Krishna pleasure by fighting with him, because all of the different relationships, all of the different energies, all of the different moods, all of the different things that we enjoy in this world and take pleasure of in this world, they're all there in Krishna. Otherwise, they could not be in us. You know, so Bhishma is there waiting, and Krishna arranged it for all the sages and Yudhishthira. What was the main purpose? The main purpose was to pacify the heart of Yudhishthira. It was twofold. It was to pacify the heart of Yudhishthira, and it was to give renewed vigor to the leaders that were left to conduct the affairs of state and the social structures in the human society according to the Vedas, according to the Varnashram system. Now we have the Hindu Dharma, but it's not Hindu Dharma. Originally, it's the Varnashram Dharma. The word Hindu does not exist in any of these scriptures. And now everybody is sectarian, bifurcating themselves. We were talking this morning, I was getting a little history lesson from our pandit, you know, Akrurinath Prabhu, and he was explaining to me how the whole thing fell apart and how, who took what. Anyway, they decided to divide according to nation states instead of kingdoms. Anyway, that's a long story. We don't have to go into that. But the fact is that there is a system, And that system is given in the Vedas. And it is given out of affection by Krishna. So it's not that Krishna wants us to suffer. And here, the means becoming happy is given very clearly. When we all get together and we glorify Krishna. Just see how happy we become when we come together. We go back to our homes, we go back to our lives and our, you know, occupations and taking care of our families and all those things. But when we come together here and we actually hear and chant the glories of Krishna intensely together, we become so happy. We become so happy. And it's not that we all just become, you know, one and the same by doing that. This is another point being made here in this verse. That, you know, they went back, the sages, they came together to glorify Krishna, and then they went back to their hermitages. Now, of course, this is a symptom of, you know, how things, you know, go in the material atmosphere. In different places, there are different environments, and there are different moods and different ways that devotees serve Krishna and love Krishna and learn about Krishna. When Gopa Kumara was going from one planet to another, getting enlightened in the science of Krishna consciousness, he would go to different places and he would see, you know, in one place he would see the sages performing huge sacrifices, you know, and big festivals and, you know, very opulent and you know how it is when they have huge sacrificial events in the Vedic culture. And then he went on to Tapaloka and he found the sages. They had their little hermitages all over, and they would come together, and they would discuss, you know, Krishna Kanda. The four Kumaras were the head of this, of these devotees, these sages, and they would discuss, you know, Krishna consciousness. And then, and Gopa Kumara, of course, was deeply impressed because these were meditators, but not ordinary meditators. Meditation doesn't mean that you just, you know, calm your mind and try to make yourself, you know, pacified in this body. The real purpose of meditation is described by Krishna in Bhagavad Gita, yukta asita matpadaha. Yukta asita matpadaha. In those verses which describe the process of Astanga Yoga and meditative yoga, the last line is yukta asita matpadaha, to make me the goal of life, to make Krishna the goal of life. The goal of meditation is to see Krishna in the heart. He's there in the heart of everyone. And he is so friendly. He's so friendly that he goes with us wherever we go, whatever kind of situation we get ourselves into. Krishna is so kind and friendly and such a dear friend that he goes with us wherever we go. Whether we get ourselves into bad situations, good situations, indifferent situations, Krishna's always there, waiting for us to turn our faces to him. So in the material world, that's the situation. We're covered and we have all these different duties and all these different, you know, obligations, you know, forced upon us by the modes of material nature. And Krishna's there underneath it all, you know, organizing and awaiting for everything for us to turn our heads to him and giving us facilities in all these Vedic literatures, you know, being present. And therefore, Prabhupada's, you know, in the purport, he's stressing this point that, you know, even though there's a wide variety of things described in the Vedas, and a wide variety of activities that promote spiritual progress and elevation in Krishna consciousness or towards Krishna consciousness, wide varieties of these things. All of them are meant for one purpose, and that is to come to the point of glorification of Krishna. And this is the root cause of the variety in the material world. It is the root cause of the variety in the spiritual world also. But in the material modes of nature, you know, we're kind of separated from one another by the material energy. But in the spiritual world, you know, there's no material energy. You know, we're always all together in Krishna consciousness. Krishna is always in the center. That's the difference between the spiritual world and the material world. And therefore, in the Brihadbhagavatamrita, it says, even the devotees, sometimes it's described that, you know, the material world is in some ways nicer. Well, I don't want to mislead anybody's mind. What I mean by that is, when you have a jewel, and you put the jewel on a black or dark blue velvet, solid colored cloth, the facets of the jewel, they because of that contrast, they stand out and they become attractive. That's why the jewelers, they always put their jewels on those kinds of backgrounds so that it becomes more attractive. So even Krishna's pastimes, even all this spiritual knowledge and the way that the spiritual knowledge is brought to us, you know, through these different events, in the material world, it sometimes seems like the pastimes are more beautiful than in the spiritual because they're set in the backdrop of the material nature. So there's such a strong contrast between the material nature and Krishna and his pastimes and his pure devotees that it becomes sweeter even. But even that's true, in the Brihat Bhagavatamrita describes that the devotees always glorify the spiritual world. And they want to go to the spiritual world. They may become so happy and satisfied that it doesn't make any difference to them where they are because they're in the spiritual world when they're glorifying Krishna. But still they glorify the spiritual world and they want to go to the spiritual world. We should always remember this, Srila Prabhupada told us. Don't desire to stay here in this material world. I mean, maybe very few rare souls who are, you know, so inspired to be a missionary, you know, to Krishna, you know, wants to stay in this material world birth after birth. But still, even those devotees, when you hear their prayers, they are glorifying the spiritual world always. Because there, Krishna is always present, and the devotees are always unified around Krishna, and they don't have to go back to their hermitages, you know, in Goloka Vrindavan, you know. It's different than here, different than the material world. So this is the situation here. All the sages have come together and they are glorifying Krishna by hearing Bhishmadev explain, you know, the intricacies of how to live life in this material world and keep Krishna in the center and follow, you know, Krishna's laws so that we can become not in the prison house, you know. Even though the prison house is organized and funded, you know, by the government, it's not that the government, like, wants to have a prison house. They would rather not have the prison house. What an expense. Save a lot of money. But they know. The government knows. There's a certain number of persons who just are criminals, and they want to, you know, get what they get at the expense of others from violence, you know, from stopping other people from getting their share. They want to take their share without doing anything, without working honestly, without making the effort. So, therefore, Krishna very kindly gives us all these Vedic literatures and arranges situations like this, you know, so that persons who are fully realized can sit and explain these things in a way that we can understand and we can implement them into our lives and individually and collectively create an atmosphere which is conducive to thinking and about Krishna and serving Krishna and loving Krishna. And then we become happy. You know, then we become happy. But in order to maintain that happiness, like for instance, I was discussing Tapaloka when Gopakumar was there with the four Kumars and the other sages, they would get together and they were such deep meditators that when they meditated, their forms would change into the forms they were meditating on. The form of the Lord that they were meditating on, their forms would change into that form. And Gopakumar was seeing this. Whoa. I mean, what would you think? You know, you'd worship that person as God and want to stay with that person forever. And if that wasn't good enough, you know, because when the sages then went back to their hermitages, there was Gopakumar. He didn't have a hermitage. He was just visiting, just passing through. He had just arrived. So he felt a little lonely. He felt a little not completely satisfied with that arrangement. But then they would come out again and they'd talk again. Then he would again become, you know, satisfied. And at one point, you know, to make him more satisfied, they blessed him and empowered him by the strength of their yogic mystic power to be able to see, you know, the form that of his worshipable Lord outside himself wherever he looked. See, this is more full Krishna consciousness. But he still wasn't satisfied with that. Because in that realm and in that level of Krishna consciousness, there's no practical, loving dealings. It's a, you know, the meditation is there and the form is there, and not just ordinary meditation. This is a meditation in which you see the form of the Lord before your eyes, and you can smell the fragrance of the Lord and see the detail of the Lord's hair and dress and everything. But you know, it's a neutral. It's a neutral state. It's not active. They don't actually have, you know, a loving exchanges with Krishna in the same way that Gopa Kumar hankered to have loving exchange with Krishna, because his worshipable Lord was Madan Gopal. You see?
So,
all the great sages then glorified Lord Sri Krishna, who was present there, by confidential hymns. Then all of them returned to their respective hermitages, bearing always Lord Krishna within their hearts. See? So there are different ways of, different methods of worshipping Krishna. And all the different sages, they perform all these different methods. But the thing that brings them together and makes them united is that they all have Krishna as the goal. And they awaken Krishna within their hearts. And therefore, they're satisfied, they're happy, even though they're in the material world. They follow joyfully, willingly, more than willingly, joyfully. They follow Krishna's rules and regulations given in the Vedas. They worship Krishna willingly, lovingly, not out of force, and therefore they become satisfied. That is our position. You know, when our service comes to that stage where it is done willingly, not out of force, not out of some, you know, artificial, not artificial, but an arrangement by Krishna to accommodate all these things, when it becomes completely spontaneous and natural, then we go to Goloka Vrindavan, where there's no need of, you know, assemblies of sages and people coming from all over in order to get, you know, that happiness and then go back to their own, you know, different varieties of methodologies. There's only one method there, and that's loving, pure loving devotional service to Krishna in Goloka Vrindavan. So these verses and these descriptions are meant to give impetus to devotees to go forward in their willingness and in their ability and in their knowledge of how to organize themselves in human society and in their daily lives, so that they can always remember Krishna, so that they can keep Krishna, you know, in their hearts continuously. And only that makes one fully satisfied. This is the conclusion of the Bhagavatam. And that is why the situation was arranged like this, so that Yudhishthira could be relieved of the guilt that he felt, and he felt very bad. And Krishna, as it's described here, he's very affectionate to his devotees. He's in the heart of the devotees. You know, here Prabhupada says, the devotees of the Lord are always in the heart of the Lord, and the Lord is always in the hearts of the devotees. This is the reality. And forgetfulness of him, and the modes of nature that cover us in order to facilitate that forgetfulness of him, to give us the facility to forget him, causes us to forget that. This is the sweet relation between the Lord and his devotees. He's always making arrangements to bring us together. He's always making arrangements to inject Krishna consciousness into the heart of human society and the individual souls in human society. So we should never think that because the modes of material nature are being conducted by Krishna and that all these, you know, suffering things are going on in the material world, that therefore Krishna is organizing in a way to intend from his side to create, you know, suffering and all the horrible things that are going on in the world. No, that is our misuse of the laws of nature. It's our misuse of his kindness and facilities that is creating that situation. He's calling upon us to love and serve him and conduct our activities in our family life and business life and economic life and educational life and all the things that are necessary, you know, to have a full spectrum life, human life in this material world in a way that brings us ultimately together and awakens our consciousness of him so that we can see one another also in relationship with him. And then the whole thing becomes very congenial and very happy. Due to unalloyed love and devotion for the Lord, the devotees always see him within themselves. And the Lord also, although he has nothing to do and nothing to aspire to, is always busy attending to the welfare of his devotees. So these things that are given in the Bhagavatam and the other shastras, they are meant to teach us how to think, how to feel, how to will spiritually. They're not just stories to entertain us, to give us some relief from temporary, you know, anxiety. Therefore, it doesn't say that, you know, they just return to their respective hermitages and, you know, that's that. No, they come, they hear the confidential teachings, they go back to their hermitages, but they're bearing Krishna within their hearts. They take Krishna with them in their hearts and they remember Krishna. And therefore, they become satisfied. And because the nature of the material world is to forget, they have to come together from time to time. And because we're very forgetful in Kali Yuga, we need to come together a lot, like every day or here in this yatra at least 3-4 times a week. We have to come together and keep hearing these things, keep reminding ourselves and tasting, you know, these things together. Because we feel happy, and then we can carry that, you know, into our, you know, lives and not forget. The more we practice, the more we practice, the more we practice, the more we will carry Krishna that is awakened in these assemblies, and then we won't forget. And the more we don't forget, the happier we become. And it's not that therefore we decide, oh, now I'm happy so I don't have to come to these gatherings anymore. No. No. The person who thinks like that, it will forget and will fall down, especially in Kali Yuga. They think that they are, now I've become above the rules and regulations. Now I've become above the practices that the spiritual master has given us. You know, our founder Acharya, Srila Prabhupada, we're spiritual masters because Srila Prabhupada, you know, we agree to follow the procedures he's given us, the program he's given us, which is tailor-made for us in this Kali Yuga, tailor-made. You know, how to be Krishna conscious. Hare Krishna. I think a sage is asking a question. He needs a microphone.
It's a muddled question. It might take me a while to get it.
Well, that's because you just heard a muddled class. So when you hear muddled classes, you ask muddled questions.
The one thing that stood out in the class was talking about the how Maharaj Yudhishthira was feeling guilt or compassion after the people, after having been ostensibly the cause of so many people dying and so forth.
Yeah.
And I've been corresponding with the devotees. I want to talk about guilt and shame and its use and what it's involved. I want to ask about that because I've been corresponding with a devotee who's been having the practical problem that he feels guilty that he finds himself unable to practice his sadhana very perfectly, and so much so that when he comes to the temple, it makes him feel. He doesn't want to come to the temple anymore. He wants to stay outside of the association of devotees because the association of devotees makes him feel guilty, and he would rather stay where he can stay in Maya and not experience that shame. But I'm wondering for a devotee like Maharaj Yudhishthira, who is a pure devotee, and we know that, you know, just chanting Hare Krishna is better than all the forms of atonement and prayashchitta and everything. And that a pure devotee never identifies himself with his material body. And even though, I'm wondering, so it's a long and muddled question, but I'm wondering how could Maharaj Yudhishthira feel guilt and shame if...
I answered that question in the very beginning of the class. that a good person, when he does something wrong, he feels bad. And a bad person, when he does something wrong, he feels good. So this is the difference. If your guilt causes you to feel good when you're in a bad situation and bad when you're in a good situation, then it is not spiritual guilt. It is not proper guilt. It is not proper humility. It's false humility. It's caused by false ego. The false ego is what is giving him the pain. It is not the genuine spiritual guilt that he feels. Because when a person feels genuine spiritual guilt after having done something bad, then it gives him impetus to step up again and continue. And that's what we have to do. It is not that anybody is ever condemned forever in spiritual life. It's not like the Christians, you know, you're damned to hell, you know, to a lake of fire forever. You know, it's not, real spiritual life is not like that. So that's the difference between real humility and false humility. Real humility is an impetus to continue with the process, not that we go away from the process. But if it's from false ego, if the guilt is just from embarrassment, because I don't want to be seen by other people to be like this or like that. No, that's that heat, that's tapas. That's what the heat of tapasya means. You know, you voluntarily put yourself in a situation where you're going to feel that heat, because your ultimate goal, your ultimate aim is to become pure so that you can please Krishna, so that you can be pleasing to the devotees and to Krishna. But if you're trying to avoid that heat, then that means you're just trying to, you know, you're trying to make a permanent settlement. You're trying to make a comfortable situation for yourself in the material world. And when you're put into a situation where you're not comfortable, you don't want to go there. So that's the difference between a serious devotee or a progressive devotee and a neophyte. Because a neophyte devotee, due to the inability to take that heat, you know, just like persons who are dealing with fire, doing with atomic energy, intense heat, they have to have, you know, a asbestos suit. They have to have the proper, they have to be in the proper situation to be able to get near to it. You know, otherwise they'd get burned. So that asbestos suit is the advancement, you know, the spiritual advancement that we achieve by the process of doing bhakti yoga in intense austerity. I think in the second canto it's described that Lord Brahma's penances were done with loving devotion. They weren't just, you know, in order to get something big for himself. They were done with loving devotion. Therefore, he had the ability to tolerate anything. You see? So this is the thing. This is the dichotomy in the material world, you know. Are we doing it for Krishna or are we doing it for us? Therefore, in the beginning, the devotee may feel some awakening, some very strong, sudden awakening, you know, and get even shadow. Rupa Goswami describes it in the Nectar Devotion, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, as a shadow attachment to Krishna. It's actually a feeling coming from the heart of someone who's more advanced than you, and you're in the company. When we first came into the movement, I remember I had these experiences where everything looked bright and colorful, and you know, the gloom. It was in the Mission District. Vaishnava and I were in the Mission District of San Francisco. It wasn't exactly like, you know, the most effulgent, you know, neighborhood in San Francisco. And yet when we came out from Mangal Arati in the beginning after the program, we would look and we would see everything like brilliant and colorful, and we would notice the birds singing and the light of the sun coming up, and everything looked glowing and, you know, but then, and even more, we would have, you know, sensations when we came in front of the deities and chanting the holy name, that then maybe Krishna wants to see, oh, are you doing this for me or for you? Are you doing it to get those experiences, or are you doing it to actually serve me with love? So then he'll take those things away. And when he takes those things away, then you begin to feel less blissful maybe, and you maybe feel the heat again, you know, the inconvenience and the discomfort. And then Krishna wants to see, are you willing to do that for me? or is it just for you? You see? And if it's just for you, then you have to wait. You know, you can't, it comes a point where you can't enter the fire unless you're fire. You can't enter the fire unless you have some, you know, some quality, some ability to go to that fire. So it's a mistake, obviously. And the only thing you can do is explain it, you know, in a detached way, out of affection for the person, you know, in a way that can try to get the... But you know, it's a voluntary process. And if a person's determined, if a second nature habit has become so fixed and so ingrained, Prabhupada said it's very difficult to overcome those kinds of habits. I remember one verse, question and answer session, or maybe it was end of a lecture, I don't remember. Anyway, Prabhupada was talking about second nature habits, and he was saying that, you know, when those second nature habits become very fixed, it's hard to give them up. Even when you're a devotee, even you've gotten the taste, it's very hard to give up. So he said, the only thing you can do is you have to bring that to Krishna. You have to come to Krishna, to the deities, and put that, he said, put it on Krishna's plate. You tell Krishna, look, I want to give this up. I can't. I just have this bad habit, and I just can't give it up, but I don't like it. I don't want it. You know, now, I've come to the point of realizing that I can't do it by myself. Only you can do this. Only you. Now I'm putting it on your plate. You know, and then when you do that sincerely, for the purpose of becoming pure so that you can serve and please Krishna, not for your own purpose, so that I can get away from a discomfort situation, then Krishna responds. Because it's described like it's described in this purport. He's in the heart and he loves us. He wants us to be happy. He doesn't want us to suffer like this. And that's the key element to understand why, you know, the suffering exists and why it's not Krishna that's responsible for it. It's us that's responsible for it. And until we take responsibility, until we own the problem ourselves, we can't want to go forward. It doesn't dawn on us. It doesn't come into our mind, you know, to do the right thing, to change, to tolerate the heat, to do the sacrifice that we need to do, to become qualified to go back to Krishna, to be in Krishna's personal association. So we need to hear these things. And if he takes himself away from the association of the devotees where he doesn't hear these things, then the nature of the material world is so powerful that he'll just get covered over completely again and forget. And that's the way it is. That's life in this material world. Yes.
Can there be a problem with the other devotees pressuring people too much, you know, to make them... like to judge them too much, if they're just beginners and they're coming to the temple? I remember when I first started meeting a devotee and he was talking to me, but then I really enjoyed his, and what I would hear from campus, I was going to university, and I would hear the mridanga playing all the way across the university, and I'd run to go there to see the devotee and talk to him. But then he started telling me, well, how come you're still not shaved up? How come you're still going to college? Why don't you quit and join the temple and stuff like that? It started to frighten me a little bit. And then I started to hear the mridanga and think, oh, I better walk around the campus the other way so he doesn't see me, because he'll call me and he'll tell me that I'm too lazy in spiritual
life.
Well,
this is a different subject. This is a different subject. Now you're on the subject of maturity. You know, now you're on the subject of maturity. The more mature a devotee is, the more they can present the truth in a way that is palatable for the person who's hearing. But even if you do that, even if you do that, even if you are expert, even if you do it in a nice way, still the person has to, you know, voluntarily, you know, submit. Because, you know, advancement in spiritual life, the active principle of advancing in spiritual life is submissive oral reception. And that doesn't mean that I'm submissive to this particular person or that particular person. That kind of submission is temporary and it doesn't last. You know, or you can be submissive just when you know your Gurudev is, you know, present, but to anyone else, no. You know, but submission, when we say submissive oral submission, we mean submission in character, by nature. And what is the prime evidence that a person has achieved that level of submission is that when they hear something that's true, they go for it. They accept it. They can accept it, and they can move in the direction. Prabhupada said, hearing means doing. So I would say, yes, if the person's immature, and you may say something in a way that may cause the... But that doesn't mean we become less sympathetic, you know, to the persons who are trying sincerely, even if they're mature, you know, and more sympathetic to the persons who are being, you know, abused or whatever, and go out into the material world. This is just the rationalization of the material intelligence to stay in the material world. That's all. It's just a rationalization to stay in the material world. So sometimes it may not be that they're just... It may be that they're telling the truth and the truth hurts because he doesn't want to hear the truth. But if a person's very mature, I mean, Prabhupada would... When you listen to Prabhupada's lectures chronologically, day after day, hour after hour, you know, which I've been doing for the last many years, you get accustomed to Prabhupada using the word rascal because he used it a lot. He used the word rascal a lot. And sometimes people, after they hear it for a while, they don't like to hear it anymore because, oh, I'm a rascal. No, no. And then every once in a while, Prabhupada said, yes, we are rascals because we are in this medieval. In other words, he was including himself. Or he would say it in such a way that he was so mature and so, it was just so clear and obvious that the person would be called a rascal and they'd like it. So the only thing we can do individually as an individual person is advance into our spiritual life to become mature. If you want to help another person, if you want to help a lot of people, if you want to help a whole bunch of people, then you have to become very mature. That's the business of empowered devotees. But whatever situation we're in, you know, Prabhupada encouraged, and Lord Chaitanya gave us the order, all become guru. He said, you all become gurus. And Prabhupada explained and elaborated on that subject. To me, it means that, you know, according to your capacity, and everybody has a different capacity, we can't all do what he does, you know. I mean, you know, that's like, you know, maybe. But we can do whoever we are, wherever we are, we can do something. Everyone can. Everyone can repeat what they hear in the Gita. Everyone can testify to what they've experienced, you know, in Krishna consciousness. And in that way, preach. In that way, be guru. And then, you know, it's up to each individual person to accept or not. And you can't force it. The immature devotee will try to force it. And that's what you're talking about. That's the subject matter of immaturity and maturity. The neophyte will sometimes just not take into consideration the feelings of the other person and say things that are causing the person to. But Prabhupada was so expert. He was so expert that he would do that, but he was noticing. You know, maturity means that you're not self-absorbed. Your mature consciousness means that you can see the other person and notice the other person and adjust yourself in order to make the other person at ease. You see? So when a person's on that platform, more people will be able to come the way, you know, of Krishna consciousness. But even if you're like that, there are going to be some people who are just going to, they're determined. They're determined not to submit. Then they have to wait and they have to suffer. And they'll have to suffer more and more and more. And it's painful for the devotee to see this. Therefore, the devotee is called Pardukaduki. He feels pain when he sees others in pain. He feels happy when he sees other people happy. Therefore, that nature forces him to act in a way to try to help other people come to Krishna consciousness. Because he knows the only way that a person can actually become happy is when Krishna is awakened in the heart and he can associate with Krishna and Krishna's devotees in loving devotional service. That's the only platform of happiness. The other platforms of happiness are just relative degrees of suffering, relative degrees of temporary cessation of some suffering that we're going, or reducing it to a certain degree. Then we think we're happy, but it's not. The overriding situation in the material world is dukkhayama shashvatam. It is a place of suffering. You can't change that. Even if you become fully Krishna conscious, you become happy. It's not going to change the whole nature of the material world any more than, you know, when a prisoner becomes rectified and ready to get out of prison, you can't expect, you know, the prison to turn into Vaikuntha. You know, the prison is the prison. He has to go out of the prison. Of course, we can. I was talking with Omogalila, who was in the jail with Sridhar Maharaj and the others in Bombay. Remember that incident? There was an incident in Bombay, and they got blamed unnecessarily. They got put in the prison, and Prabhupada. This was after Prabhupada left, and they just chanted and danced, and they were making devotees in there. You know, they were like. They made the place different because they were really surrendered. They were really surrendered. But they didn't stay there. They wanted to get out so that they could spread to more people and more receptive people. And, you know, so Hare Krishna. We should mature. We should become mature ourselves. We should own the problem. We should stop blaming others. We should stop blaming. Even though we understand it's the material nature, we should stop blaming material nature because we have that option. Every single soul has that option. We don't have to go for it, for the material modes. And when you make that decision, and you once and for all, with your intelligence, then you can restrain yourself. And it's not that you won't feel, even when you're in your material world, even when you're advanced. Prabhupada said that, I heard him just the other day, he said, the nature is the male and the female. In every species of life, they get attracted to one another. You cannot stop it. It's natural. So you, in order to resist that and not go forward and try to, you know, act out your agitation, you know, you have to make a firm determination with your intelligence. Otherwise, wherever you go around, and that's why everybody's so agitated. They go and they see pictures and sounds and, you know, advertisements, and everyone just, you know, enjoy, come here, enjoy that. And they always have a nice, beautiful young girl with it, you know, whether they're, it may be a, you know, they're advertising a floor mop, you know. It's, there's some beautiful, you know, buxom, you know, like, sexy girl, you know, mopping the floor. Come and buy my mop, you know. Oh, really, you know. Or the latest model of the car comes out and there's, you know, a beautiful girl on the hood. You know, it's like, and nowadays it's so crazy that now they, you know, it's, they have the young, beautiful men doing the same thing. It's like it's become completely crazy. So who can restrain themselves? Prabhupada described Ajamil. He saw one, you know, couple, Shudrani couple, you know, preparing for sex in the forest. And he, that kind of thing wasn't seen at all. So, but it attracted his mind, and he began to think about it. And then he fell down with that prostitute, and you know, his whole life was practically ruined. And Prabhupada said, "But in these days, like it's everywhere. You don't have to go into the forest and see some people sneaking around. I mean, it's everywhere, openly. It's a matter of fact. If you don't do that, then there's something wrong with you." That's the whole rationalization. If you're not like that, if you're not trying to be sexy, if you're not trying to, you know, it's like, so how important it is that we don't succumb to that temptation and of the discomfort that we feel when we're in a spiritual environment. Because when we're in Maya, then we feel uncomfortable in the spiritual environment. When we're in Krishna conscious, we feel uncomfortable in the material environment. That's the reality. That's the reality. So we should tolerate the discomfort that we feel when we're in Maya and come to the temple and just tolerate it, and it goes away. Just like Prabhupada said, the itching. You know what's that verse? Yeah, yan mai tunadi grihamedi sukham mitu cham. It's like the rubbing of the, you know, you can't satisfy the itch just by rubbing the hands together. It doesn't work. If you just tolerate, then the itch will go away. Then you're okay. So the heat that comes, that has to be tolerated. There's no shortcut, no pill to take. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Bo. Srila Prabhupada ki? Srimad Bhagavatam ki? Go Premanandi. Hare Bo.